It's time for the thirstiest podcast on the net. You're now listening to Thirst World Problems with your host, Nick Dougal, along with Mr. Bell and the Doc.
Another podcast in the mix. Thirst World Problems. What episode are we at? Eight?
Nine.
Oh, Mr.
We got nine coming up, man.
We had nine right now?
We had eight? We just put out content.
I don't know. Probably ranked, what do you think we're ranked? 500,000?
We're probably...
You think there's 500,000
podcasts
in the world?
Oh, for sure there is.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I wonder what the average episode people stop at when they just stop doing podcasts. You know, like some people maybe just do, okay, I'm going
to
do three.
I'd say like four or five, man, to be honest.
I think so too. If you do four or five and people are like, oh shit, this is not what I want to do. Like, this is not what I was thinking.
You know what I don't want to do?
Just get lazy.
I don't want to go to the dentist. I don't want to go to get a massage. And I don't want to have to sit there and talk to people as I'm getting serviced, if you would. Like, is that the dentist
like
the
job?
Other day? No. That I've never paid for a hand job during a massage. I don't know if you can get those
but
anywhere.
But you paid for a hand job.
Paid for a hand job? Oh,
but
many
not,
times.
But not during.
Many times.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
So you don't like the dentist. You don't like.
I don't like going for a massage and having chit-chat with people.
I hate it.
While I'm getting serviced.
Right.
And not talking about hand jobs. But yeah, while you're getting serviced. Like in between, like the hygienist is there cleaning your teeth with this damn scraper. I'm just like worried about getting nicked and not wanting to bleed. And then in between, she's like, okay, let me rinse you out. So you get rinsed out. And then in between, it's like, oh, so what are your plans for the holidays? You got anything coming up?
I hate
like,
that shit.
What am I going to say? Like a couple words before the scraper is back in my mouth? Like, yeah, no big one. Open wide, please. Open wide, please. And then.
Sounds like a porno to me.
This goes on for a few more times. And the next time, it's like, oh, done all your Christmas shopping yet? Like, no, haven't quite started yet. Okay, oh, looks like I nicked you there. Gonna need to give you a full rinse here.
Yeah.
Like, just
all right, let's take a look at his mouth.
Doing.
Let's take a look at his mouth, and they fucking nick you. Oh, you gotta start fucking using more mouthwash or some shit, right? Prevent the bleeding. Like, yeah, fuck, remember. You cut me, motherfucker. My mouth is dry because of you.
Are there any other situations like that you don't like?
The massage one, too, is another one where, like I'm going... for a massage, I want to be like nice.
I just
want
to close my eyes and just fucking like, not do anything, man.
Right? Just
I've never
off.
Gotten a massage.
You've never
really?
Gotten a massage?
Never.
Oof.
That's crazy.
Look, especially with all these nicks and bruises you get from playing sports, it's.
I've never gone to massage.
You should look into it, man. Especially if you
got.
Even
the places I've gone to, I've never gone to a massage.
That's actually fucked.
Is that weird or what? It never crossed my mind. Hey, let's go get a massage.
You should get one.
One thing I need to find a new dentist. I'll tell you that right now. My dentist is obsessed with Brad Pitt. Like, I went to her office, right? You walk into the office. And,
okay.
Like,
new or old Brad Pitt?
Huh?
Like, early Brad Pitt? Or are we talking like...
Like, she's in love, like, throughout the years, Brad Pitt. Like, she's probably what? I'm going to say she's got to be pushing 45 now, right? That's that's when... like, what, 20 years ago? That's when, I guess, Brad Pitt was huge, right? 20 years ago? So, yeah. So, I walk in. It's just a collage just from People Magazine and all the shit. Just Brad Pitt everywhere. And, yeah, they just... And the worst part is, you know, they kind of tell you, oh, what are you up to? You know, I'm just going to go do a show or something, right? I'll tell them that. And then they'll try to be funny. And you're just like, okay. Like, I don't get it. Like, are you... Like, the entire time, the concept to them is like, okay, I'm going to do my best to make him laugh kind of thing, right?
Get on his level. Yeah. He's a comedian.
And if I get him and make him laugh, then I can make anybody laugh, right? It's like, no, like, just fucking brush my, clean my fucking teeth, man.
Brush my teeth for you?
You go to the dentist, get your teeth brushed.
Brush my fucking teeth for you,
just
man.
Brush my teeth.
Every morning.
Scrape my tongue.
Yeah, scrape my tongue, brush my teeth. Tell me I need to floss more. You know, the common lines.
How many times do you go to the dentist a year?
I probably go three times.
Yeah, about the same, three, four times.
No. I'd probably go like two, three times, man.
Two, three times? I'm actually, I have to get my wisdom teeth taken out still.
That's crazy.
Is that crazy?
That's crazy.
I still have to get my, and you know what? I'm not even getting it done here. I'm actually going to India and getting it done.
Why?
That seems crazier.
My neighbor went to U of M here.
They'll break your teeth, man.
Let me finish the story.
Pull out your fucking middle tooth, fuck.
My neighbor
let's
went.
Let's not let him finish the story. So he works out in India now.
Yeah, my neighbor went to U of M here, dentistry, and then he went back, and I told him that I'm coming because we're pretty good friends, right? I told him that I'm coming, and he's like, I need your help. I don't want to spend fucking $1,000 on one tooth, right? Because you got your wisdom teeth taken out.
Yeah, I got scammed though. I got them taken out at like two different times. So the first time I went, when they could have taken them all out, they were like, "Oh, you know what? These other two are perfectly fine here. So we'll just take out these two here, and you'll probably never have to come back and see us. Like, yeah. You know, it'll be all good." So they took out my first two. I got knocked out and everything. They took them out. I was pretty sore for a little bit, but it was done. I was like, "Okay, well, one and done. Good. Never have to worry about this. Get to keep my other two teeth." Slick. And then just a few months ago, they call me in the office and they're like, "Well, these two got like cavities and stuff on them. Guess we probably should have taken them out at the same time we took the other two." I'm like, "You motherfucker. Like, you knew that I should have taken those teeth out. You just wanted to cash in later on down the road, man. So that'd be double surgeries."
Yeah. Dentists are worse than drug dealers. They try to fucking...
They pretty much are drug dealers.
Yeah, they are drug dealers. They will try to get every penny out of you, fuck.
Could you imagine doing one of those, like, surgeries without any anesthesia? Or, like, when they pull one of your teeth or something like that, man?
Does it put you fully to sleep when they do that?
For the wisdom teeth, yeah. Like, really? Completely knocked me out. But, I mean, you don't have to get knocked out. You could just take, like, the local...
The local one, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever had, like, surgery or anything? Like, on your arms or knees or anything like that?
No.
I had I got my ACL and MCL repaired. And I had to get my scope, right? So I'm thinking, like, hey, just put me down. They fucking froze my, like, lower body. So I sat there watching this guy cut my fucking...
Yeah, I don't want that. I don't want you to see that.
But obviously, I was so medicated. I remember just asking, like, hey, man, can I get a copy of that? And I want to watch it. And he gave me a copy of it. But I don't know what I did with it. So someone fucking from Valley Village or something has a copy of my...
Sold it at a garage sale.
Yeah. Like, so, but yeah, it's crazy. Like, you just feel it. And you just feel like... It's just the weirdest feeling in the world, man.
Yeah,
like,
I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to, when it's happening, I don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it either.
Like, just wake up.
Yeah, I just want to wake up and it'd be done, man.
Yeah, I'll take the risk.
Good, because I need it. Question. So, B and I were talking about this earlier.
Okay.
When you take a shower, how many times, what's your percentage of being, let's say you have a debate, you're debating with yourself a situation. Like, when you take a shower. Like, what do you think when you take a shower? Let's start with that. How's that?
When I'm up there showering, I'm like...
Yes.
Well, I got a mirror in my shower, so usually I'm like, damn. You did justice to your body, buddy.
You did justice. You got a mirror in the shower?
Yeah, man. Got to make sure that I see everything that I got here, man. But generally, I just plan out my rest of my day. Like, what do I got to do now? What do I got to do this? Just get the plans laid out.
Okay.
Right? Not usually too much contemplation. Or I put on a nice podcast.
Like, yeah, what? I have to have some kind of sound going, like music, some talk show, something like that.
What do you usually listen to?
There's like a week in football podcast. Oh. And then obviously you got to turn on the Thirst World Problems.
Oh. You need the Thirstiest Podcast.
Oh, there you go. There.
That's got to be on there.
There you go. Look at that. I usually think about like situations if I'm in. Let's say like...
Just put yourself in situations.
Right? Yeah, like debates and stuff. And I'm always 100% right in my own debates.
So are you with yourself in the shower? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not with myself in the shower. Like, I'm like, I'll put myself in a situation that, you know, let's say a deal that's gone bad or something. And I'll think about things like that, right? Like just realistic situations I try to put myself in.
So what's the last situation? Because it seems like you have one in your head here. What's the last situation that you were debating in there?
Like there's times where like just in general, like let's say I already had a conversation with somebody, you know, you try to backtrack and see what you could have done differently. Things like that. That's what I go by. So like I'm trying to book some shows in England while I'm there.
Okay.
And I've had a few conversations that didn't, they're okay, but like, you know, obviously you always want to be better than the next time, right? So I always go through things like that. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I look at myself in the mirror and go, damn.
Do you ever come out of the shower after going through these situations kind of angry with yourself? about the way the situations went, or do you leave it in the shower? Like, do you go in like happy and they just come out just raging?
You're always happy in the shower.
Yeah, you
water,
are. You're always happy.
Water hitting your gorgeous body.
Just calming and soothing, eh?
Turning it up more and more.
Yeah.
Burning your skin.
Trying to see how hot you can go at first is great.
Just going right to the limit. Yeah.
Sometimes you go too hot, you got to put on the cold water.
Yeah. Sometimes you get, you get too hot, you leave, you see your body steaming. And that's it, man. You just know you're going to have a fire
you
day.
You just know
No one actually takes cold showers, though, right?
I will from time to time.
I take cold showers.
Yeah, I will in the summer.
After games, basketball games, I'll take cold showers.
Okay, yeah.
It's good for you, man.
Apparently, but
it is, but it's not that comfortable.
No,
it's not comfortable.
That's the thing.
Not at all.
I need that hot tub feel when you get
I don't know how people take baths. That bothers me. The concept of a bath. Think about it, man.
It's pretty sick, but
it is sickening.
No, like it'd be relaxing. It's just like you can't be in a fucking tub, right? You got to be like, you got to have a legitimate like jacuzzi or like some shit that where you can actually like sprawl out, right? Oh, yeah. Like if you're in a tub,
but think about
your head's out of the fucking water and you're fucking sitting there like you're
that's exactly what I'm getting at. We're not talking about jacuzzi. I'm talking
about to go into surgery or something.
People sitting in a tub and you're just like sitting there and you're like,
well, they got the soaker tubs, right? Or like, no,
man, those don't
bigger,
do anything.
And you know,
your fucking torso's out. Your torso's outside the water. What are you gonna do?
Slide back a little bit there.
Your whole torso's
back
out of the water.
Listen, I just don't want to sit.
You see folds on you that you'd never expected.
Your belly button's out of the water too.
Belly button's up. Gut is up.
Listen, you put some
nipples just touching the water.
Put some bubble bath in there, man. You're good. You don't see nothing.
No, man.
It's like one of those sensor bars in there.
Water changes.
Yeah. That's when you have problems, right?
Yeah.
Like when
and then you want to dump your face in. That's fucking nasty, man.
The water just fucking pitch black, man.
Maybe take a shower before you take a bath.
What's the point?
No, see, that's
it's
the
like
thing.
Going to the pool. You're supposed to soak off before you get in there.
Are you really?
Yeah, you're supposed to take a quick shower.
I've never done that. Actually, yeah, I've seen people do that. Yeah, you're supposed to. Never did it.
Isn't that what the chlorine's for?
In chlorine we trust, eh?
Exactly, man, exactly. Christmas is near. We're in December now. I think November we just kind of like just had guests and I don't know where I was in November, but...
Yeah, neither did we,
I was MIA.
You must have been out hanging out with Doc, man.
Yeah, MIA. shout out to Doc on that.
We could have... We should have given Doc a shout to see if we could have got a hold of him.
But it's December, man. It's Christmas is near. Thirstiest time of the year.
That's what you guys were arguing.
Thirstiest
I'm still not convinced.
Time of the year. It's the
thirstiest time of the year.
You guys worked on that all day? That's
all
nice,
fucking
man.
Day.
That's nice. You got another line to that? Do you even know? I don't know what song that's from.
You
got to
pay.
I think it's
you got to pay for more if you want.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah. Charge it to the game.
Subscribe to the
pay-per-view.
Premium.
It's pay per view.
That's right, man. Christmas, thirstiest time of the year.
So, what are we drinking tonight? Since it's the thirstiest time of the year, and we're starting off December right here, what do you got here? I saw you come through with some nice looking bottles
over there. Today I brought some Virginia Black, it's actually not from Virginia. I just found that out today. It's called Virginia Black, but it's not from Virginia. It's from the U.S. somewhere. But so, it's a whiskey, American whiskey. Drake sponsors it. It's pretty good actually. You know, put some ginger in there, you're good to go. Put some Coke, you're ready to go. What's this other one we got here? We got
this baseball bat over here.
Yeah, what is it called? Something
like
Negro.
Champagne campaign, man.
What's it called down there? Cognac Negro.
Gordon Negro.
Gordon Negro. There we go. Pop it open. We got some champagne. Sip champagne when we thirsty. That's how it is, man.
Little whiskeys and then some mimosas. Man.
We got a lot. You know what would be good, man? Some fucking samosas right now.
Samosas?
Samosas, man.
I got you, man.
Samosas right now? That'd be dangerous.
Actually, it would be good.
I got you.
It would be pretty good.
I got you.
You got me?
I got you. Good,
if it's beef, I'm out, man.
No, man. I don't eat beef meat in my samosas.
Beef samosas, nasty, man.
No. Never had one.
Okay, I have a question for you. Since you, a little bit of both. Best of both worlds right now. Which roti is better? West Indian roti or East Indian roti?
West Indian. East Indian isn't even like a real roti.
That's real roti.
Yeah, it's literally that's where it came
from. That's where it came from. You guys just fucking decided to put chicken in it.
We just decided to put stuff in it. Like
that's not real roti.
You just dip.
That's just a burrito that you guys are eating. That's just a burrito that you guys are eating. That's all it is.
Go to Taco Time. Go to Taco Time.
Yeah. You might as well just go to Taco Time. Like.
Listen, I will go to Taco Time. If I can't find... Oh, Taco Time? Taco Time's the place you want to go. You don't want to go to Taco Bell.
Think about that. You but non-bread, you rip it, dip it, eat it. Good. Yeah. Caribbean is like...
Non-bread's not
roti.
It's all
falling apart, man.
Caribbean's falling apart. There's... shit in there that we don't even know.
That's just a chickpea flour.
Chickpea flour. Dry shit. Dry chickpea flour that just falls all over the place. How are you going to eat that in public, man? That's like eating fucking just wild popcorn.
No shame, man. You just have a nice little bite, man, wrapped in there. You got your curry chicken wrapped in there.
Yeah, man. Oh, that's so that's nice. That's just a burrito, so nice. Man.
Plus, you're talking about non-bread. Non-bread isn't what
you just replaced. You just replaced rice with fucking chickpea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then now it became Caribbean.
There you go. You put some curry in there.
Curry is what we got.
That's what's inside the roti.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. I don't understand where this is going, really.
I'm just
like, you don't even eat roti.
Yeah, I do.
You're talking about non-bread.
I'm heated about this situation.
You're heated about this?
Heated, man.
I got a roti, too.
I have a shout out.
I got samosa that roti.
Shout out to my boy, Steele. We had a conversation about this. He goes, hey, man, let's go get some roti. I was like, all right, where do you want to go? Like, I'm thinking East Indian restaurant.
No, you weren't thinking no Eastern. Listen.
I was thinking the East Indian restaurant.
No, you don't go get roti. Roti is something you get. Like, if you're talking East Indian style.
But he's.
If you're talking East Indian style, you get that in addition to whatever you order.
He is Trini. I'm expecting he's going to go. Like.
So then you're expecting West Indian.
No, I'm thinking,
if he's Trini.
Because he probably eats out all the time. If me and B went out, like, hey, man, let's go get roti. Right? We're going to go get East Indian roti.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So then why wouldn't you assume if the West Indian guy goes out to
roti? Because he probably eats out all the time.
So don't you... I don't understand your logic. Yeah. Don't you eat East Indian roti all the time?
No, not all the time.
I can't follow this. Sir.
Exactly.
Are we already in our cups?
Exactly. God. I'm already empty on this cup. No, my theory is they should rename it something else.
No, that's impossible, though.
Why not?
You can't do that.
They can rename cities. Why can't they rename?
Because it's a food, man. Yeah,
exactly.
When has a city ever been renamed?
Hello, Bombay, Mumbai. Now back to...
Yeah, but that's like...
You know how many signs you got to change?
Burma, Myanmar.
This, you're just changing the fucking name. There's no signs that you got to change.
Yeah, but that's because of like different shit. Like, that's not just, this shit gets mixed up. Let's make it fucking not roti anymore.
They should just call it Caribbean burrito.
Caribbean burrito. Yeah, they should actually. Yeah.
I think you guys should probably change yours just to like, you know, like untasty bread.
It is tasty.
It's so tasty.
Roti?
Roti is tasty.
Just roti. You guys are talking about just eating roti.
Why would you
non-bread?
Just eat it alone?
Yeah. You don't eat it alone.
You know what you do eat alone?
You know what you have it with?
The whole meal?
You know what you have it with? You know what you have it with?
A roti.
Legit chickpeas in there.
There you go, right?
That's what you have with.
And then like, imagine if you put some curry chicken with the chickpeas.
And then wrap it.
That actually does sound good though, man. That sounds really good.
Now all of a sudden.
I want a burrito now. I want a burrito.
I want a Caribbean burrito. Now,
there it is.
That's what I'm asking for.
Now all of a sudden.
Next time I go to like, what's a place?
Are you gonna shout out people on air about getting any?
No, I'm not shouting out. What's a something at the Forks, whatever, wherever, any Caribbean place. I'm just going to be like, yo, man, give me that Caribbean burrito that you got, man. Put that beef in there. We're good.
So then what do you think about like West Indians calling themselves Indians still? Like if they called it West Indian roti.
Okay, I got another thing. I can't stand.
Oh, here you go.
I can't stand when I hear chutney music.
You can't stand chutney music, yeah. Period, you mean?
Period.
Okay.
I think that's, what about you? Do you listen to it?
Do I listen to it? Yeah. Not a whole bunch.
Do you listen to heavy
metal?
Often. What was that?
Do you listen to Soca and stuff?
I listen to a bit. I listen to a bit.
What do you
See, here's
what does Barbados like listen to? Like what's what's the music that they listen to?
Well, yeah, you'd be looking.
I always hear like a few different things, so I don't know.
Well, you'd be looking at like your soca, your calypso.
Calypso, that's it.
You know, like, but like my whole thing is I don't have the ear for it, right?
So you don't.
I'll be down. I'll listen to soca. Yeah. Like I'll listen to calypso. I'll hear some dance hall, and I'm hearing all the same thing. Okay. The moment I say did you hear that new Soca song, or did you hear that new Calypso song, or whatever it was? Like, I'm just saying the first thing that pops in my head. And then people be like, no, I didn't hear that. Mm-hmm. I heard a Soca song. You said it was Calypso. I heard a Calypso song.
He puts a little accent on it. No.
No. Just like your roti. Right? So he said, no, this, that. And I'm like, you know what? Like, it all legit, it all sounds the same.
Say that again one more time. No. I heard a Soca
song. That's a soundbite right there.
Say it one more time.
No. This is Calypso, man.
Yeah. No.
That's a soundbite.
I heard
right
a Soca song.
But, like, yeah. So I categorize them all in this kind of same genre. And I know that's wrong because people get offended if you do that. So you got to be careful, man. You got to be careful. As far as, like, your chutney versus what? Mm-hmm. Versus what? Like, you don't like hearing chutney, but you like hearing...
Like, I like Soca. Don't get me wrong. I like listening to Soca.
Okay. It's just when they start to see that little mix. Yeah. Like, who's that guy that sings big on chutney? Oh, what is that guy?
Doc.
No. What's the song? All right. I'm at a loss. It's not the rum and Red Bull. I'm drinking rum and Red Bull. Well, that's a girl. That's not who. Oh,
that's a guy.
No.
But that's not a...
It's a bottle of rum a day, that guy.
That's not the...
The prescription. Doctor, give me prescription. Oh. One bottle of rum a day. He was just in Toronto for whatever they
had.
Oh,
that was so Toronto right there, right? He was just in Toronto. I can't even say it myself. He was just in Toronto. It's such a typical, like...
Oh, I'm going to get the name. You guys go on. I got to top my shit up, too.
Crazy. Soon. What else we got on those lists? I feel like... In a group, we need to have always, like, the devil's advocate guy.
Just the guy that swings the other way. So now you're just talking about, like just you're just talking about disagreeing for the sake of disagreeing right now.
Well,
right?
It does lead to good conversation.
See, look, here we're being fully transparent with our audience here, where we're just saying, even if sometimes we do agree, we're still going to act like we don't. Is that
not act, but I'm pretty sure, like, obviously we're... Think about it. What if we all agreed on everything? This would be a two-minute podcast, man, right?
No, but you could still expand onto the subject. It's impossible for everyone to agree on everything.
It's going
to
be impossible. But I feel like, I don't know, I just...
I feel like this is too nice, he
says
right now.
Do you think you're the devil's advocate in the group?
I think so, probably.
You think you're...
You guys always agree.
You think you're more than me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I like this. This is a battle to see who's the most evil.
You're more than me?
I think so.
Okay. No, I'm not going to argue. I'm just...
Who's even more evil?
But actually, you usually disagree too, though.
I disagree a lot.
For the sake of disagreeing, or just because
you're always wrong?
No, I'm
not. I think that's what it is, right?
You're always wrong.
There's a disagree, you're just wrong. Like, that's different from disagreeing.
Who's wrong these days? What is wrong?
Go back and listen to some of the podcasts.
Go listen to the scoring. Go back to the last podcast. Listen to the scoring versus points per game.
Oh, buddy, I got you. I got you.
Killed you.
Good, man.
Killed you.
Killed you, man. 3-1. Killed you 3-1 right there.
B said he ate your lunch on that, man.
I don't bring a lunch.
This is the Thirst World Problems Podcast.
I don't know. Everything's a little bit more revealing on Halloween than it is New Year's Eve.
What? Why? Are you crazy?
Are you crazy?
You don't think the thirst is high on New Year's Eve?
Thirstiest day? Are you talking about the thirstiest day of the year right now?
Thirstiest day of the year is New Year's.
Thirstiest day of the year.
New Year's.
Thirstiest day of the year.
New Year's and my birthday.
Thirstiest day of the year. Go.
Every day.
Welcome to Thirst World Problems. This is Bell, and I'm sitting here with my man, B.
How are you guys chilling?
We've got a special guest on the line. We're going to wait and do a big reveal on that in a minute, but we're going to be chopping it up tonight. We've got a big interview coming up here, and then we're going to get into it and get into the muck afterwards. But right now, I'd like to introduce Ed Roman.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Bell, B, what's up?
Not too much. Just having a few drinks. Trying to get nice and warm here as we're out here in Winnipeg.
It's too cold out here.
You're trying to figure out some thirst world problems.
Exactly. You read my mind.
Cheers.
Right. And do you have a drink in your hand over there, Ed?
Oh, you know what, man? I'm a coffee hound. And because it's like I'm an old pro. If I was barbecuing or like making dinner or something, I'd be like maybe Saturday night, couple of beers, a little bit of like apricot brandy. If I was, you know, in the right mood, and depending on what I was going to eat, maybe like a martini, dry, really dry, dry, super really fancy. Dry, you know?
So everyone's asking, who is Ed Roman?
I'd like to know myself sometimes. Oh, man, I'm from Ontario. I'm a Canadian, a Canuck. I fell in love with music at a young age. A big part of the reason why I pursued it, though, too, is because I'm dyslexic, struggled a lot with language and reading and writing in school. My mom is an amazing lady, and she put a guitar in my hands at a really young age and encouraged me, you know, to write my own stories and songs. And in some way, that sort of helped me overcome, as I'm still dealing with it sometimes, that obstacle in the academic world that I had. And then when I had the chance to have, you know, teachers and other mentors and people like that, I'm like, I want to pursue music as a living, whether it be, you know, teaching or playing live, being a sideman. But I've always kind of been writing. And the group of guys I grew up with, we all kind of did that. It was like March break wasn't about skiing, you know, weekend or the getaway for 7 days. It was like recording gear rented, somebody's basement somewhere, bedroom, something. Lock yourself away for a week and like try to record 20 songs. You know?
So was there anywhere where it was the spot that you guys would have that locked up?
Well, yeah, I guess my pad was, and my parents were great for that, but you know, I had this room over the garage, and it was kind of like an open concept. So aside from having my bed in there and like a dresser and stuff, we jammed in there. So there's like a drum kit, bass amp, guitar amp, keyboards. We had a Hammond organ in there for a while. Like, so I got up in the morning and almost immediately would start messing around. And I had that fortunate ability. But then, you know, all musicians collect instruments. I've been doing that ever since. In my studio now that I work out of Area 51, it's sort of my hub for creativity, recording. I record a lot of other people out of there. But you know, you find a zone, B. You it changes over the years. But you get that feeling about a spot, you know. But that's the other thing, too. You just don't know when a song is going to hit you. Like, I mean, I've written songs on the can. In the bathtub.
Best place to write them.
Can you remember one of the names of the songs that you wrote there while you were taking care of business, let's say?
Let me think. I want to be free. There might have been some of that in there. You know, like it was just like, yeah, you're having a good movement. You know, you're doing it, whatever. But that's the thing. It's not like totally always related to that. It's almost like it's even the bathtub is like that. You get into this mantra about an idea or like a phrase. And when you leave that, it sort of propels you into the whole experience. So
that's really true, actually.
It's like the catalyst model.
Yeah. Because it's not so much the activity. It's just that at that point, you're in the tub. That's why people sing in the shower, right?
Dude, I hear that. In the car, it's the same thing.
It's because you're free. There's no one else there. And you're kind of, you can be creative without any kind of like remorse or anything stopping you, right? So it's kind of not that's what happens when you're on the can, but you can make a case for it. You can make a case for it, right? All things aside.
Usually when I leave, there's a lot of remorse.
So kindly light a match.
So what's your weapon of choice as far as instruments goes? Because I hear that you play a whole slew of instruments.
Well, man, I fell in love with the bass, you know, at a really young age. And it was really because a lot of people didn't want to do it. You know, it's like we had three guitarists in the band and it was like, you play it. No, you play it. You play it. And then somebody gave me a Jaco Pastorius record. It was a teacher from another high school that handed a couple records to a buddy of mine, good friend of mine. And he said, my teacher said, you should listen to this. Well, I put those vinyl albums on and I was like, what the? Because harmonically, chordally, the construction and the orchestration of some of the arrangements and the music on, I think the first record was a solo album, Jaco Pastorius. The other one was Crisis. It was unbelievable. Like, and I was like, I want to do this. I want to. But the other thing is, too, I also came from that sort of like storytelling background, songwriter kind of thing out of the 70s. Even like growing up in the 70s for me was like, there's eight of us living in a small farmhouse with like three TV stations, a couple radios and a record player. It was like trying to find time for record space, radio space, lyrics, and remembering lyrics in my house were like, okay, it was like a game show at the dinner table. Like, did you get the lyrics for All in the Family right? You know, no, you what did he say there? You know, it was so for me, I saw other people's enthusiasm in writing and in songwriting, and that connection to my disability sort of fueled that because it's weird, man. As a dyslexic, a lot of times you're kind of reading things three times to absorb it and then to use it in that way. And as a result, you're kind of like photographically remembering stuff. So for me, storytelling hand in hand, like I said, really helped me out with that. And that songwriting process is also very intimately connected with my bass playing.
Okay. Just going off that a little bit more, I'm just wondering if you hit any real like hurdles or moments where you're kind of like, I can't do these moments because of the dyslexia.
Yeah, I remember almost failing, going to summer school. Those were early moments where, you know, the academic framework expects something. And a dyslexic has to work extremely slowly and sometimes under pressure can make a lot of mistakes. Art and making art, as B was saying too, you're not your own by yourself, but you are. So you aren't judged by the moment, a time constraint. I mean, there are other things in the, you know, modern world as an adult, you know, that you have time constraints. I have to be at my job. The studio time is 10 hours, so we have to be finished by this time or whatever it is. But that also, again, means that I don't have to do that. And it takes me away from those, like I said, those boxes in the academic world. So I was terrified as a young kid thinking, and in the 70s, sometimes teachers didn't totally get it, like, you know, being told you're stupid or, you know, continually, you're going to fail.
People blew that stuff off a lot, I guess, eh?
I blew it off because I saw the encouragement in my family and friends from what I could do with my instruments. And all of a sudden, so if I, you know, the field party kicked in, Ed, play another tune. Okay, I'm not the stupid kid, you know. Ed, we want to play. We want you to play in the band with us. Okay, cool. You know, somebody wants me to be a part of this. So I went, okay, I'm on the right track, and if I keep doing this, things are going to be cool.
So at what age, I guess, did you start to say, okay, this is my profession now? Like, when did you start to put things together and really take it seriously?
That's a beautiful question because I guess if you look at it from like the technical perspective, a professional is somebody that gets paid for what they do, right? Yeah. Well, that's true. But I mean, so what, my first paid gig, I was 15, playing with a teacher of mine in a stage band at a club in Toronto. So for me, that was like, hey, we can make cash, you know, doing this too. But like I said, even as a writer and playing in cover bands or being a side man, you know, I mean, I played in an African band for 4 years, was on the road across Canada. We came through Winnipeg. We were through Regina, Saskatoon. We were out in British Columbia, Fernie, all over the place, down in the U.S.
An African band.
Yeah, it was great. eight piece African. That's the thing. It's like, I like all kinds of music. I mean, that's when I made the comment before, kitchen sink. I mean, people have a hard time sometimes classifying me and the style of music that I play because from album to album, there's a lot of, you know, difference in terms of like not just the records, but from song to song, you're going to hear like a country tune or a funk tune or an African style number or a spoken word piece or a reggae number. Or it doesn't really matter to me because I think our experiences really define us, and I think it's important to embrace them. And for being in an African band was a huge learning experience. I learned so much, not only about the music, but culture, because we had people from Liberia in the band. We had a guy from Kenya in the band. the Congo, Cameroon. So I was like, wow, this is really amazing, because and I ate up everything that they kept feeding me. So it was, it also really, you know, it was part, sometimes people say, I kind of hear this African influence in the music. And some of the guys I play with, I mean, Dave Patel, he's a drummer I record and play with. He's originally from South Africa. And Mike Friedman, a guitar player I play with, he's from South Africa. And they're both into, you know, multi-genre kinds of music all over the world, too. So it's got to rub off.
So would you classify your music as anything? Or would you put it in a genre? Or do you think genres is something that's out of bounds? Or what do you think about that aspect?
Well, man, it's not out of bounds. But, like, I mean, if you got to classify it, it's kitchen sink. Like I said, it's like a little bit of everything. I loved artists when I heard, you know, like from record to record or year to year. Wow, it wasn't that they were trying to redefine themselves, but they weren't afraid to go into territory that was unexpected. You know, Bob Dylan's a classic case where he went from acoustic to electric. Willie Nelson at one point in time was told, hey, man, Stardust, it'll never work. Willie told the record company, you're full of it. And sure enough, it was one of his biggest selling records of like American standards. I think it's like how the artist is living in the moment and what's moving them. So it's like the writing experience is the same. And I don't want to like negate it. I want to follow it.
So did you ever have run into any issues like that, I guess, with like producers or just the record companies in general being like, okay, well, Ed, like we need to sell this record in one direction. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's weird. It was like that for years. But now it's actually what has defined me in that regard. It's in a way why Ed heads, I don't know, almost 50,000 people around the world that listen by it and, you know,
Edheads. You
know, involved. Yeah, they're Edheads. There's something. I think there's something to be said about that. And like even other great writers, like look at Paul Anka, man. Like, I mean, I wasn't into Paul Anka a couple years ago until getting into the biography and everything. And I saw him live, and then I started to realize, like, other than, you know, his contemporaries and what he did as a heartthrob with, you know, around the time of Fabian and stuff, his songwriting. Everybody from Frank Sinatra to Tom Jones, there's a huge list of people that he wrote for. And I guess that's what it was. Those kinds of things kept sticking with me. Oh, well, Stevie Wonder didn't mind doing this on a record. Well, why not try it? You know,
it's kind of like a reward for sticking with your guns to kind of be justified after this time, eh?
Yeah, I guess it is. That's part of it. And that I can keep doing it, man. People say, like, what's the biggest reward? That I can do it. I can keep practicing my craft, playing, writing, and connecting with people all over the world. That's really what I've always wanted to do. It seems to me the other huge catalyst for why I do what I do is that sort of potency behind the pen, if you will, from other writers. It, you know, I saw words that people remembered from songs that they wielded in conversations that seemed to be like anchors for morality and justified, you know, their actions as a result. I mean, one of my heroes has been for years, but in recent years, you know, Bob Marley and his writing and his sort of movement, that whole sort of humanity vibe is what I've always kind of latched onto in whatever artist that I really fall in love with. So I guess that's what it is. In some way, I'm trying to like connect with that same kind of like movement, you know, and if it connects with more people around the world as a result through more kinds of music, okay, that's really cool.
Well said.
It is one of those things, especially when you're talking about like people adopting lyrics for their own and referencing those. Like there's just be odd times. And like you said, like conversations or you're remembering something, doing something completely unrelated. And those lyrics from whatever song it is pops in your head and you keep replaying that. And so it's kind of neat to hear you vocalize that and express making a connection with that to kind of motivate you to pursue that kind of career and continue to do something like that.
Well, hey, man, and there I have my own. Like, I mean, you know, I get in the car, if I put something on, there's a reason for it because, okay, I might have a 2-hour drive or something, But that mantra, like, that you're talking about, even it's from one phrase, from, you know, one chorus or the verse in some spot, it's that propulsion mechanism. I've written songs that don't even say what that phrase is, but the whole emotion behind it has made me come home and grab my axe and go, this is how I'm feeling because of that. And I love that about art in general, even when visual art, pottery, dance, there's a plethora of different places where you get it from. I get even get it from farming. Like, it's crazy.
Farming. So 2 hour drive, you said, who's Ed outside of music?
Ed is a son. Ed is a husband. Ed is a farmer, for sure. Farmer. I always sign all my letters, musician, gentleman, farmer.
What does Ed have on his farm?
That's what I want to know. Well, what's Ed, cooking?
Ed, are you butchering cows out there?
Well, no. My dad, like, here's the thing. Like, my dad was a public servant. Some would say politician. But we grew up in farm country, and my dad was very passionate about agriculture. They grew up on Scugog Island, just off the reserve. It wasn't too far from there. When they immigrated here, didn't know a lot of people. But, you know, coming from the old country in Slovakia, farming and agriculture is paramount. It's part of your life. It's what sustains you. It's what keeps you alive. My dad and my grandfather and my uncle all had this sort of wonderful ability to understand animals. And in a way that today some might even seem as savant, if you will. Okay? And what I mean by that is, for instance, my uncle had a passion for Holsteins. My dad was beef cattle. My uncle could look at two different animals, a male and a female, and be able to crossbreed that animal to create a wonderful offspring just by looking at them. And as a result, through breeding in the herd, keep strengthening the herd because the quality of the bloodline keeps going up. In 1976, he sold a calf to Japan for $1.6 million.
What?
Because of the quality of the animal, that bloodline still exists today in Japan.
Are you serious? And,
yes, I'm absolutely serious.
Wow.
And my dad and mom were of the same ilk, especially my dad. And he had that sort of innate ability too with animals. And he started breeding a special type of beef cattle that came from France that he had to bring here. It took him a year. They had to keep the animals off the island, off Halifax, you know, quarantined. Blood work, it was crazy, like in the 1970s, kind of what was going on with the farming business in terms of, you know, cattle and my family. And as a result, like I said, knowing how to look at animals, breed them in certain ways, the quality of meat was highly sought after. And we had a wonderful functioning family farm that was prosperous for many, many years as a result of, you know, what they could do. So a big part of my life is in farming and agriculture. We had 1,500 acres that we worked, and that's why I say I sign a musician, gentleman, farmer. I'm very like, you know, standby-ish when it comes to say there's a close kinship to farming and art. It's an art form to understand your land. It's an art form to understand your animals. You have to live symbiotically in those situations. Pay attention and move and pull yourself and allow the experience to pull you through it. Sometimes there's good moments. Sometimes there's bad moments.
Well, with anything, right? Like you have to understand your artwork, whether it's agriculture, like you're saying, whether, you know, whatever it is, you got to understand it. Music, whatever it may be, interviews, a podcast, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You got to understand it to master your craft, right? So,
but I guess what it was to be is that it was also the passion, because I know people that may do a gig, but they're not overly passionate about it, and it's a job, and everybody needs to make money. But certain things about the passion that drives you behind it, even if it's something simplistic, can be, you know, so much more incredible and fruitful as far as you know, a living experience is concerned. And you're right, it's no different than from a radio show like this podcast. You could be a shoe salesman, but
could
if
be
you love
literally
what
anything.
You do, be, yeah, that's the whole thing. I think where even behind the art form itself, I'm always trying to yelp about the passion factor and kind of like, you know, be passionate about whatever it is that you do. It's so important, just like you were saying, just like you were saying.
So does that, knowing about animals and knowing what they're thinking and crossbreeding them, like you were saying, does that come over to you? Like, do you have a love for the animals the same way?
Well, my dad said I did, and I do. I've always been around animals all my life. I looked after cattle for years up until I was about 19, and my dad passed away, my uncle passed away, my grandfather passed away, all within inside of about 5 years. It was sort of a very traumatic time, losing all the sort of patriarchs of our family. And as a result, a lot of things changed. There was a lot of family strife, discourse, and, you know.
Well, that's probably why you carry it so heavily, right? Like, when you're talking, you can tell that you mean what you're saying. Right?
Well, and my dad was also very, like, man, because he had a basis in politics as the mayor of our town for 30-some-odd years, police commissioner for 14, chairman of York Region for 6, and he was also the first federal coalition candidate ever in the history of Canadian federal politics in York Region to win as an independent in Ottawa. He was there for 4 years. This is while he had multiple sclerosis and eventually succumbed to a brain tumor.
You've got some rich family history.
Yeah. It's a crazy story. And at some point I want to like do a documentary or something on my dad, and I love the man, but as tumultuous sometimes as our relationship, isn't it always is between a teen and his parent. My dad was very adamant about always wanting to know my opinion. Even at a young age at the dinner table, there'd be like 8 of you, you're 7, you know, and I was actually canvassing doors when I was at that age. You know, he'd be like, well, what do you think? Because there'd be this political discourse or discussion. Even at a youngster, he wanted to know what that kid's opinion was, and it was okay for me to voice it. And I guess that's where that passion with my dad, even in his agricultural abilities as well as his public relations, it rubbed off, man. It was like everywhere all the time.
That's probably where the public servant thing comes from, right? Because he's so much into asking even his own son what he thinks. If you're like what a politician in terms of what it's supposed to be is what you're saying is a public servant. So it's kind of seems like he's been exercising that around you and his family this whole time he was ever here, right?
Well, he hated it, dude. When people would say politician, he would call it polytricks.
Polytricks. Yeah. I like that. I never heard that one before.
And he was asked to cross the floor by the conservatives and the liberals. This was during the Mulroney administration. He didn't want to do it. And the reason why is because when that happens, there's a lot of favoritism, party politics, certain things that make it hard for, let's just say, a representative to talk for their constituents.
Campaign donations.
There's so much, man. He had people come into his office asking him to counter run or add a third vote inside of the system so it would split the vote for money.
Wow.
He kicked people out of his office on a regular basis. So I guess for him, that's what it was. He would always say, well, he never would ever promise anything. He would always just say, I can only do the best job that I can. And if the public wants this is the public's opinion from what I understand, then that's what we're asking for, even if he was diametrically opposed.
And could you see a spot in him where you could tell whether he was happier in the political aspect of things or if he was happier just – at home on the farm? Because sometimes you really see people have that dichotomy between them where they're capable of two things, but you can really tell where their home base is.
Home base was home on the tractor. He loved to decompress there. But I wouldn't see my dad sometimes till 11 o'clock at night because of council meetings or different things that were going on. It was so important for him to be there in the town, for the town, that I saw little to none of him for a good part of my life, even when he was in Ottawa for 4 years. I was, you know, living by myself with my grandmother and my sister. So I understood the importance at a young age of how important it was for him to be there. I mean, he would get a call, you know, and somebody would say, there's somebody complaining about a dog running loose in the neighborhood. He'd go and get the dog.
Real hands-on, eh?
He's a people's man.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd drive around when people were doing subdivisional work or something, if that was going on. He'd be like making sure they were cleaning up the public roads, because this was for the public, not to leave your junk all over the place. You know, like, he would do that.
That's awesome. Ed, I wanted to ask you a quick question here about some of your song titles. So you got some pretty fun and quirky song titles. I was just wondering if any really stuck out to you or as some of your favorites.
I don't know what you got there. They don't make things like they used to. Twister Boy, Red Omen, that's the most latest one. Lyrics to me, are defined by moments in my life where I'm really like navigating so much from my day-to-day life, intermingled with everything that I see in media, social media, newspapers, television, then tied into conversations that I have with somebody buying onions next to me, to, whatever it might be that, it's hard for me to say one title sticks out more than the other.
Fair enough. Just
I would say, people also makes them feel uncomfortable sometimes. The track I Found God is definitely that, because I'm a pantheist. So to me, the planet's God.
Okay, very deep answer to that. The planet is God.
Deep, man.
Well, everybody is always, there's so much dogma with everything in our lives, socio-religious politics. It's widespread, and there's a great divide in a lot of thinking, as opposed to sort of a united front of common sense, you might say. And what I've learned from a very young age, without even having to go to school or read a book, is that my living environment has taught me so much. It has kept me healthy. It's kept me strong. It's been a moment where I've been more afraid than I've ever been afraid in my life. Being part of the food chain, black bear situation, to writing as a result of an experience that's just happened to me. So I guess for me, that's why it feels so strong on that level. And that tune really is about that, and I always say it's an epitaph kind of number. It's like, something that I would want scrolled across my stone, it came upon a vision. I leave you my admissions.
Okay. And what about, so that's where that song came from. What about I Wish the Wolfman Was Back?
I grew up listening to Wolfman Jack, man. Like, I remember stuff coming in the 70s on AM and FM radio, and he would host, rock and roll shows on a regular basis. And it seemed like, hey, when he would come on, and anybody that I was with would just like their necks would snap, the radio would get turned up because there was something cool that was about to happen. And he was, represented that kind of really personal connection with the music that's playing and the passion behind it, and anybody could call in and talk to him. Even DJs of yesteryear, people like Alan Freed or Madman Cuso, they were all kind of part of that rebel movement of like, well, we're going to spin this whether you like it or not. People like it. We're going to give people an opportunity. So he was kind of like that pirate. That was willing to swashbuckle his way through the universe, if you will, and say, I'm going to play this. You got to remember, a lot of those stations were pirate at one time. He was moving around from location to location because there was a huge black and white issue in the U.S. and it was considered race music, and people didn't want their kids listening to that kind of stuff. But rock and roll, it found its way, and I wanted to write that tune, pay homage to like saying we need that again. And then here's the thing. It's like radio and television has changed so much that now shows like this, these shows that you guys are doing, and this kind of a thing that's happening is the new rebirth of the bell curve when it comes to that. Because when TV came in, radio was like, well, we lost all our great hosts. There's the new medium. Well, the same thing has happened, and now radio stations, big stations, FM, AM, big guys with radios, antennas, amplifiers, huge amounts of, you know, money and stuff, and they're not really that, you know, available anymore. And this new medium makes it happen. We can have shows like this, like B was saying before. We can have a drink, talk about what pushes our buttons, what makes it happen. And, man, someone in Singapore can tune in, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Canada, U.S., Mexico. It doesn't matter. It gives us that potential. And I always say, man, we're at a beautiful moment when this technology really gives us that opportunity.
It's like,
so that's
quick.
Again, you know,
it's like quick, and it's quick information, but at the same time, you don't really want to be dialed. You want to be dialed into it, but it's, for example, like a sports reporter. Before, they would, you know, all these big companies would have them move to the TV screen, and you're watching them. But now, more people are tuned into their social media or a quick notification to get news. Or say, for example, the podcast, you're driving somewhere, you're going to go do something, but at the same time, you can tune into this certain type of media, right? So it's a new way to do things, I guess.
It gives you more options, definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sometimes more options can be crazy. Like, okay, I'm surfing Netflix for hour three and still haven't figured out what to watch.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that this is different than like a film or like, you know, a produced, you know, special on TV or something. It's more like you said, B, it's like information, and depending on how people want to do it, that's the beauty of it. They can sift through the other junk that they don't want to pay attention to and really kind of, you know, fall in love with, get the information, discern for themselves, you know, how they feel. I mean, you guys got to do the same thing between checking out what the TV says at the same time, social media, then your local, like maybe online newspaper publication kind of things. There's this whole wide assortment that you kind of look at before you go, this is what probably happened.
Yeah. And I mean, what we really love about it is just the ability, like this conversation never would have happened if I was just watching TV. Right? Like,
bingo.
This is the thing where you can actually connect with people and have conversations with people. And other people who are interested in it, they can hop on if they want to listen to this. If they don't, they don't. But we can still have that conversation to your talking with Ed Roman and ask him difficult, cool questions like, are ghosts real?
Are they real for you?
I've got some things that haunt me.
I think we're all defined by our experiences, that's for sure. I mean, if I was to say, well, this happened, it's a story. I mean, I'm just relaying the information in some way. What makes it real is my experience. And in most cases, some of the things that have happened to me are still hard for me to define. But at the same time, I know that on a coincidental level, the chances of them occurring are the one to the trillions. And I love like listening to detectives. I watch a lot of like shows on detectives and investigative stuff. And they always say, well, you know, if somebody says something that's sort of related to the case, they never consider it a coincidence. But in this world, sometimes people don't believe it. They'll say, well, that's a coincidence. And then, but for me, when the level of the coincidences that occur and the improbabilities of the coincidence occur inside of the incapabilities of those coincidences occurring, I go, something else is happening here. And yet, even though it had happened, if there's a bigger message or a bigger picture behind what it was, I'm still not yet sure. Other than the fact that I know what happened makes me go, well, that was my buddy that passed away. I can't help but not think that. So, you know, that for me confirms.
Okay, there's got to be a story here.
There's got to be.
You got something for us. Come on, Ed.
Okay. So my buddy Boehner, his name was Bane. Everybody called him Boehner. It's a great, crazy name. his last name was Arnold. It's like first name, last name, first. Anyway, he passed away. Traumatic experiences. Don't want to go into that. But here we are having the wake. And it's post-wake, but we're at this little pub. And there's about 35 of us, really close, that we're all really, really tight from a really young age. And I decide I'm going to go out to the street, just chill out for a bit, and put my coat on, go down the stairs. I'm out there for about 3 minutes, and these three kids start walking by, and I can hear the conversation starting to ensue. And what are we going to do? I don't know. Da, 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 da. And then, well, we could break into a junkyard. Maybe we could find the right door. And da, 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 da. And I'm sitting there listening to this, and my mind just snaps. And I stopped them, and I said, hey, excuse me, can I talk to you for a second? And I think I startled them. Because I kind of came out of this atrium, out of the bush. I was probably looked like I was some stalker or something. But I was still wearing a suit and stuff from the funeral and whatever. And I said, look, I have to stop you because are you guys talking about breaking into a junkyard to steal a door? And they look at each other like, well, is this guy a cop? You know, like, are we busted? And I'm like, I'm not a cop. I'm not going to bust you. I just got to know if that's what you were talking about. And they were like, well, yeah, my buddy, you know, we took his parents' car out. We dusted the door. We got to try to fix it. And I'm like, look, you're freaking me out. And they look at me like, what? And I'm like, my buddy and I and another friend of mine that's upstairs right now, my buddy that passed away, we're celebrating his wake. We did this. We took our friend's car by mistake, tried to repark it in the garage, clipped the side of the door, messed up the door. Went to a junkyard, snuck in the back, pulled the door off, rode home on our bicycles with the door down dirt roads and side roads just so we wouldn't get caught, reattached this door. His parents weren't the wiser. And I said, I can't believe that this is kind of happening right now. And I said, would you come inside? I'd love to introduce you to my friends and just tell them, because I don't think they would believe me. If I just went inside now and they said, sure, you know, we'll come in. I'm like, great. So I sort of usher them in. We go upstairs. People are sort of chit chatting and it calms down. I take my coat off. I say, hey, everybody, listen, I got to tell you what just happened. I said, these three kids, da da da. And I sort of relay the story. The room goes quiet. A couple people look like they just saw a ghost. And my buddy stands up and says, Ed, we were just telling that story. So for me, the coincidence, and if me even going down the stairs, the kids even coming by, even that incident of them even getting into that kind of crap and doing that stuff, me doing it with the guy that passes away, asking them to come in as a favor, going in, they're talking about it. It's just like, it's too hard for me. And all I could think of in my head, I could hear my buddy almost laughing. He kind of sounded like Ernie when he laughed from Sesame Street. And I thought, he's doing it. He's like, you know, knocking on the proverbial door going, hey, I'm here, guys. I'm messing around with you, you know. And I was like,
that's click, crazy, click, actually.
Click, you know.
That's
the story.
well, there you go. That was a good one. So tell us a little bit about your about your latest album, where we can get it, what it's about, some track on it that we should better make sure we don't miss. And then we're going to send you through the gauntlet here, which is a series of quick questions we have for you.
Awesome. Well, the name of the new album is an anagram of my own name, Red Omen. It's big. It's red. It's got a crazy rooster on it. It's got 13 crazy numbers. It's remix on the end, but it's nuts. It's like everything, like I said, from country, funk, folk, R&B, there's like spoken word stuff on there. It's just fun and it's red. It's good to get for this type, you know, seasonal change, red seasonal, Christmas, snow, however you want to look at it. And go to edroman.net. All my social networking buttons are there. Check me out whenever you want.
Yeah, I walked in and we were playing some of your stuff, and I didn't think we were playing I didn't think that was your stuff that was playing, and I thought it was like a early, late 80s, like starting rap, early 90s, like spoken word type thing. So when you say that, you're not lying, just so the listeners know.
Well, thanks, man. And I mean, it's not like totally like, you know, now coming back again, the States like a veteran. Hey. Get the rapture, the UK, the USA, and then back again. It's I don't want to be blatant. If it comes out that way, it is. If it's not, I'm not going to force it.
All right, Ed, we're going to send you through the gauntlet here. So just answer.
Do it.
So just answer these the best as you can, as quick as you can. All right.
Yeah, baby.
So your favorite drink?
Red Stripe.
Tequila, whiskey, or vodka?
Vodka.
Halloween at the bar or at a house party?
House party.
If I wasn't singing or farming, what would I be doing?
Aerospace.
If I could karate chop someone in the throat right now, who would it be?
Oh, I don't want to hurt anybody, dude. I'm a pacifist, man. I don't know. The worst pedophile in the world. I hate people that hurt kids.
There you go. Something that would surprise people that you do.
Jesus. I do crazy imitations.
Okay, we might have to come back.
Yeah, we might have to come back. Yeah, the gauntlet. This isn't ending it.
One thing you would do if you could get away with it, scot-free.
Climb aboard the space shuttle. Just so I could hide in the back there.
Hijack a trip to Mars. Okay, and the last one, the wrestler I look the most alike.
What? The Canadian Wild Man.
I thought you looked like Bret Hart, actually, the first time I looked up.
Oh, Bret Hart? Okay.
Yeah, I thought you looked like the Hitman.
Is it the hair?
It is the hair. It's the hair. Okay, it's okay. Yeah, it's that's amazing.
All right, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Okay, so edroman.net, that's where we can get all your social media. That's where we can find out about Red Omen.
Yes.
Anything else I'm missing out there?
What's going on with the YouTube?
Well, the lyric video is out, and really, guys, I'm still looking for an animator, somebody to help me put together a cartoon video for this single that I just put out. The lyric video is out on YouTube, and check out the lyrics because they read more like some kind of like fanciful story about a kid that's, you know, buddies with Jimi Hendrix and has a plutonium lunchbox and, you know, hangs out with people from MI6 jumping over bridges with Evel Knievel and just sort of crazy stuff. And I thought if I could find the right, you know, mix between insanity in terms of a cartoonist and animator and was willing to sort of embrace the lyrics, it would be a wonderful match. So I'm hoping it's also a catalyst for that.
Okay. Well, have you put something out like a request or anything on your social media?
I have a number of times, and even into Mercury Filmworks out in Ottawa, and I know they're busy and they do a lot of work with Disney, but they also have a lot of roster people that they farm stuff out to that I've sort of emailed. But again, I know people are busy. They're working on a budget, a whole bunch of other kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, well, I'll see who bites. I think it's everything happens for a reason, dude. Well, and I think it's just hasn't happened just yet.
Okay, well, we'll definitely put it out on our end, too, and we'll see.
Please.
We'll start shaking some trees. Now, we heard your Macho Man. Is there any impression that you can leave us with on your way out?
Always remember, shut off your garden sprinkler.
B, I think I left mine on, man.
That's actually perfect. You're playing something off your phone right now.
No, man, that's my nose and my mouth.
That's crazy.
Ed, it was great chopping it up with you.
Great.
Thanks so much
with you, man,
for being on the show, man.
B&B, yo. Bell and Bell. Bell and B. B&B. What am I going to say? Thirst World, yo.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to be in touch. We'll talk to you a little bit off air here, and then we'll send you we'll keep in touch anyways. That's what we'll say.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you kindly.
All right. Thanks again.